We talk a lot about retirement accounts,
Hmm.
you know, the 401k, the IRA, maybe a Roth. But what if the single most powerful tax-advantaged savings vehicle out there is kind of masquerading as a simple health account?
It's so true. I mean, navigating health finances can feel like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube blindfolded. But our sources today, they really cut through the noise. They reveal a strategy that's, believe it or not, remarkably straightforward if you understand the rules.
Yeah, we dove into a whole stack of financial and regulatory materials, and they lay out the structure and, frankly, the massive benefits of health savings accounts, the mighty HSA. So our mission today is to give you a really comprehensive understanding of exactly how these things work, who qualifies, and why the tax benefits are so unique that they really stand alone in the financial world.
Right, and we're moving beyond just the definition. We're going to unpack the non-negotiable eligibility rules and really nail down the specific financial numbers that allow for what our sources call the triple tax savings. This is about turning complex rules into an actual actionable strategy.
So let's start at the absolute beginning. An HSA is a funded account. It's designed to help you save for future medical expenses. Its main job is a savings vehicle for healthcare costs, but its genius is really in the tax treatment.
And here it is, the absolutely critical first step, the gateway, really. You must be covered under a specific type of plan, an HSA qualified high deductible health plan or an HDHP. If you don't have that, you can't open or contribute to an HSA, full stop.
Okay, let's unpack this HDHP gateway because that immediately sets a very high bar. Our sources lay out four requirements you have to meet. Number one, as you said, is that specific HDHP coverage. What are the other three big disqualifiers?
So the other three are really designed to prevent, any kind of double dipping or complexity. Second, you can have no other primary health coverage.
No other coverage at all.
Right. And that rule exists because the HDHP is supposed to be covering your main medical risk, sort of forcing you to rely on the HSA for those first dollar costs.
That no other coverage rule sounds incredibly restrictive. I mean, does that mean if I have dental or vision insurance, I'm out?
No, not necessarily. And this is where the law gets a little nuanced, but our sources clarify the exceptions. You are allowed to have other supplemental insurance for things like a specific injury or accident, disability, dental, vision, or even long-term care.
Ah, okay.
So if your other coverage falls into those, targeted buckets, you're still eligible.
That's a huge relief. So what about the last two criteria?
Third, you can't be enrolled in Medicare. Since Medicare is so comprehensive, you're just not considered to be relying only on that HDHP anymore. And fourth, you can't be claimed as a dependent on someone else's tax return.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, the logic is simple. If someone else is already getting a tax benefit for covering your costs, you can't also get the benefit of the HSA.
Okay, so if you meet those four criteria, you're in. But now we have to talk about the HDHP itself. What makes a high deductible health plan HSA qualified? It's not just a name. The IRS sets very precise floors and ceilings.
And this is where we should probably slow down and just look at the numbers. An HSA qualified HDHP is defined by two things: a minimum deductible and a maximum annual out-of-pocket expense.
Let's start with that minimum deductible. This is the floor your plan absolutely has to meet.
Correct. For 2026, the minimum deductible has to be at least $1,700 for single coverage or $3,400 for family coverage. And just to put that in perspective, if your plan's deductible is, say, $1,600 for a single person, it fails. It doesn't qualify, even though most people would call that high.
And for anyone planning for 2025, those figures were a bit lower. $1,650 for single and $3,300 for family.
Exactly.
And the ceiling is just as important. It defines the maximum risk you face in a year. That's your out-of-pocket maximum, right? It includes deductibles, copays, all of it.
That ceiling provides crucial protection. For 2026, the maximum out-of-pocket for single coverage is $8,500. For family, it's $17,000. These numbers creep up a little each year with inflation. For 2025, they were $8,300 and $16,600.
Okay, so these limits basically define the whole playing field. They ensure you have a cap on your financial risk.
That's the idea.
And here's a common misconception we should probably clear up. The first dollar coverage rule. While the HDHP doesn't usually cover routine care until you meet that big deductible, there's a really important exception for preventive services.
Yes, and this is what makes the plan less scary for a lot of people. HDHPs can pay for preventive care on a first dollar basis. That means things like your annual physical, immunizations, mammograms, routine prenatal care. All that stuff can be covered without you having to hit that, you know, $1,700 or $3,400 deductible first.
And our sources mentioned an interesting timely note about telehealth.
Oh, yeah. HDHPs can also be designed now to cover telehealth and other remote care services, either with no deductible at all or with a much lower one. It's a subtle shift, but it makes these plans a lot more user-friendly.
Right. So once you've confirmed you're eligible, let's shift gears. Let's talk contributions. How does the money get in? And more importantly, how much can you put in?
Well, the beauty here is the flexibility. Contributions can come from you, the individual, from your employer, or, you know, a combination of both. But the IRS sets a firm cap on the total amount.
And we should focus on the 2026 maximums, since that's what people will be planning for.
Right. For 2026, the annual max for single coverage is $4,400. For family coverage, it's $8,750. And you can see right there the powerful incentive to use a family plan if you can.
And there's a fantastic little provision for people who are maybe a bit older and focused on building up their savings.
The catch-up rule. Absolutely. If you are age 55 or older, you can make an additional catch-up contribution of up to $1,000 every year. That extra grand is critical for maximizing your savings in those years right before retirement.
And the way you contribute is just fantastic from a tax perspective. If you contribute directly, you can deduct it even if you don't itemize. That's powerful.
Even better, if your employer runs it through payroll, it's a tax-free salary reduction. That money never even shows up as income on your W-2, so you save on income tax and payroll taxes.
I love that you get a bit of a grace period on timing, too. You can make contributions as late as the April 15th tax deadline of the next year for the prior tax year. That's huge for planning.
It is, but you have to remember that one specific rule about eligibility. You have to be covered by the HDHP on the last day of the tax year. So if you join in December and make the full contribution, you're on the hook to stay covered for the next full 12 months.
And a final clear cutoff.
Yeah.
That contribution spigot turns off the moment you enroll in Medicare.
Right. Which brings us to the core benefit, the thing that defines the HSA, the triple tax savings. This is the strategic advantage that elevates it above pretty much every other savings vehicle.
Yes, the triple tax savings.
Mm.
So that means three distinct tax advantages all stacked up. Number one, your contributions are tax deductible or made pre-tax. You save money going in.
Number two, any earnings the account generates through investments, that growth is completely tax-free.
And number three, the ultimate payoff. Withdrawals are also tax-free as long as they're for qualified medical expenses. So tax-free in, tax-free growth, tax-free out.
Let's just pause on that growth part for a second. Why is that so much better than, say, a 401k or a Roth IRA? A traditional 401k gives you the first two advantages. Pre-tax in, tax-free growth, but you get taxed when you pull it out.
And a Roth IRA gives you the tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawal,
yeah,
but you're putting in after-tax money.
Exactly. The HSA is the only widely available account that gives you all three. It's a financial unicorn.
So the real strategy here shouldn't just be saving cash for this year's doctor's visit. It should be to maximize investment growth for your future medical needs.
Yes. Our sources really emphasize this. You should view this as an investment vehicle first. A great strategy is to pay for current medical bills out of pocket, if you can afford it, save all your receipts, and let that HSA money grow tax-free for decades.
And then you can reimburse yourself later.
You can reimburse yourself tax-free years, even decades later. You're just maximizing that period of tax-free compounding growth. That's the next level thinking.
Okay, let's talk about using the funds. Can I only use this money for myself?
No, and the flexibility here is a huge draw. You can use your HSA for qualified medical expenses for yourself, for your spouse, or for your dependent children. And get this, you can cover your dependents' expenses even if they aren't covered by your specific HDHP plan.
Wow. But there are constraints, right? Specifically around paying for health insurance premiums.
Generally, yes. The big rule is you can't use your HSA to pay for medical insurance premiums. But, and this is a big but, there are four really important exceptions, especially for people in transition or nearing retirement.
Okay, what are they?
First, you can pay for any health plan coverage while you are receiving unemployment benefits. Second, you can pay for COBRA coverage, which is that often expensive temporary coverage between jobs. And third, you can pay for qualified long-term care insurance premiums.
And for those 65 or older, there's even more flexibility.
Absolutely. Once you turn 65, you can use HSA funds to pay for pretty much any deductible health insurance, like retiree medical coverage. But here is the major catch, and you have to know this. You still can't use it to pay for a Medicare supplemental policy, a Medigap plan.
Wait, hold on. So even if I'm over 65, I still can't use HSA money for a Medigap plan. Why that specific exclusion?
It seems to be a regulatory thing. It's about preventing the use of tax-free money to subsidize policies that cover costs Medicare is already handling. It's a crucial distinction, and it trips up a lot of pre-retirees.
I see. And our source material mentioned a little planning note for the future, a new flexibility coming in 2026.
That's right. Starting in 2026, you'll be able to use HSA funds to pay periodic membership fees for a direct primary care arrangement. So it's aligning the HSA more with modern health models.
Okay, let's talk about the stick. The penalty for using the money for something that's not a qualified medical expense.
If you use the funds for non-qualified expenses, that amount becomes taxable income, and you get hit with an additional 20% penalty. It's a pretty stiff penalty designed to keep people honest while they're working.
A 20% penalty is definitely a stick.
Yeah.
But there is a massive safety net here that kind of opens up a whole other retirement strategy. When does that penalty just go away?
It completely disappears after you turn 65. The penalty also goes away if you become disabled or enroll in Medicare. And this is a key piece of information for your long-term strategy. It's all about control.
Let's really emphasize that, the control and ownership. Because unlike, say, a flexible spending account where you have to spend it by the end of the year.
Use it or lose it.
Right. The HSA is yours forever.
The control is entirely with you, the account holder. Not your employer, not your health plan. You decide how much to contribute, whether to spend it now or save it, and maybe most importantly, which bank or brokerage holds the money and which investments you make.
And the funds just stay in the account year after year. There are no use it or lose it rules, period. That permanence is what makes it a true personal savings vehicle, like an IRA.
It also leads directly to its amazing portability. The account is tethered to you, the owner. You keep your HSA if you change jobs, change medical coverage, become unemployed, move to another state. It goes wherever you go.
That flexibility really extends into your later years. I mean, you can strategically save these funds for a period of unemployment, for medical expenses after you retire but before you get on Medicare, or for those huge future costs like long-term care.
And we have to touch on estate planning. It's a sensitive topic, but it's vital. What happens to this very valuable account when the owner dies?
The outcome really depends on your marital status and who you've named as a beneficiary. If the HSA owner is married, the spouse just automatically becomes the new owner and can use it as their own HSA, keeping all the tax advantages.
But if the owner isn't married, the account stops being treated as an HSA after death. It passes to the beneficiary or the estate, and at that point, it becomes subject to income taxes. That's why designating a beneficiary is so important, to make that transfer as smooth as possible.
So if you're listening thinking, where do I even start? These accounts are widely available. Banks, credit unions, insurance companies, brokerage firms. Basically, any institution that can handle an IRA can probably be a custodian for an HSA. You've got options.
To sum it all up, eligibility requires that HDHP. That's the non-negotiable part. But the reward is that you need triple tax savings. That, plus the high degree of control and portability, is what transforms the HSA from a simple account for doctor's bills into a potent financial weapon.
The genius of it is really unlocked when you stop seeing it as just a health account and start seeing it as an investment vehicle in disguise. You're funding it with pre-tax dollars, letting it compound tax-free, and ideally paying yourself back tax-free years down the road.
And here it is. The final provocative thought that really defines its strategic power. Because that 20% penalty for non-qualified withdrawals disappears at age 65.
The funds can be used for anything. For non-health expenses in retirement.
For non-health expenses in retirement with no additional penalty.
Wow. So think about that. If you manage to save enough in your HSA and use other funds for your medical costs, after age 65, those HSA funds can act like a second supercharged retirement account.
Exactly. It's the ultimate flexibility. You have the choice to use that money for medical bills tax-free or for anything else, as long as you pay the regular income tax on that non-medical withdrawal, just like you would with a 401k.
That planning insight is just massive for long-term wealth.
It really is.
If this deep dive has sparked your interest, we really encourage you to consult with a qualified financial planner or just explore the HSA options available through your current financial institution.